next.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. 2 weeks ago, George Bush placed the Islamic Republic of Iran in his axis of evil. Now, the response in Iran might seem like a déjà vu of 1979, because earlier this week, at a huge rally in Tehran, there were chants of death to America. Iranians were offered a gold coin for the best effigy of Uncle Sam, later to be paraded and burned. But these details overpower what was happening in Iranian-American relations. Until very recently, rapprochement was the word of the moment. The past few years have seen the ascendance of democratic reformers in the eclectic government of Iran. And during the war in Afghanistan, Iran was noted for its cooperation. Now the Bush administration says Iran is interfering in Western Afghanistan, perhaps harboring al-Qaeda members. Here's Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld from NPR's Morning Edition today.
Iran is an interesting case. You have, I think, a lot of particularly young people and women and others who would like to see reform, and yet you have a very small group of Revolutionary Guards and Ayatollahs that control the country, and they don't seem to be making much progress. I am always hopeful that a country will change, but we have not seen much that would indicate that they're changing and want to be a part of the civilized world.
Iran can be called a divided country, reformers versus old guard, and its response to America's new tone can be understood by exploring that divide. So, Connection listeners, given the political tug of war inside Iran, how should the United States be dealing with this country? Is it time for drawing lines in the sand, or is this the perfect opportunity to encourage democratic reform in the Islamic Republic? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You can join us online at theconnection.org. We're going first this morning to Scott Peterson, correspondent with the Christian Science Monitor, who is currently in Tehran. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Scott, you were covering the rally that received so much attention in the United States earlier this week. Give us your sense of that. Was it a spontaneous outpouring of people into the streets, or something more orchestrated with, you know, buses from the suburbs of Tehran, government workers getting the day off, that sort of thing?
Well, I think I've been watching flag burnings here for the past 6 years at all sorts of occasions. This anniversary is one of the large ones, but of course there are other anniversaries that the regime marks. But normally, it's certainly in the last few years, when there's been a lot more kind of softening up, if you will, on both sides in terms of the U.S.-Iran rapprochement, it's really seemed that that flag burning and that kind of anti-Americanism and those ritual chants of death to America had really become kind of really no more than ritual. I think that what we saw on Monday, and which was what was surprising to long-term Iran watchers, was how energized not only the flag burners were, but also how energized that hardline message of anti-Americanism and death to America seemed to be kind of getting throughout the crowd. Definitely the focus of this event was an anti-American focus, and it was one that I think probably has been seen by many Iranians here as been a gift to the hardliners because of the Bush administration's description of Iran as part of the axis of evil.
There might have been a time, Scott, when as an American reporter covering a rally like that, you would have been at some risk. Did you feel anything of that?
No, I didn't feel anything of that. And it really has been quite a few years, I think, when American reporters here would have felt physically at risk from this kind of thing. They, of course, Iranians will explain all the time that they don't mean it personally, they don't take it personally, and you are welcome when you arrive here. Although one other interesting detail, I think, to note, and that was that I was fingerprinted when I arrived in Iran. Certainly the first time, I've made many visits here, that was the first time that has ever happened. In fact, and from people I've spoken to, they feel it's the first time it's happened to any American for quite some time. It was explained to me as a new policy, almost certainly something that would have been decided in some unfindable kind of hardline section of the system or of the government here that would have made such a decision. But also one thing to put in the broader context is that Iranian passport holders almost always are fingerprinted when they arrive in the United States. So knowing Iranians often, when they hear that I was fingerprinted, kind of nod and say, uh-huh, reciprocity.
So finally, Scott, since that rally, you've been doing your reporting work in Tehran, people have been talking to you. Are you getting a sense that there is, in fact, some continuing anger directed towards the U.S. president or the Bush administration as a result of putting Iran in this axis of evil?
I think that Iranians were across the board were surprised that Iran was included in this axis. And part of the reason is because I think most people on both sides, analysts and even normal people, were aware of what was happening and what has been happening to relations between these two countries since the 11th of September. I think this campaign in Afghanistan, where Washington has made clear that Iran has been very helpful, not only in helping to organize the interim government, but also I'm finding out while I'm here that the Iranian military has also been very helpful, apparently, to the U.S. military in terms of targeting information in Afghanistan. That kind of help, which would have been really unexpected and really wasn't very high profile, but I think that because of all these things, both sides were seeing this Afghanistan campaign as possibly a vehicle toward a warmer and some kind of a rapprochement later on. And I think that the Iranians feel that despite all the other elements that are going on at the moment in kind of Iran's political horizons, they feel that they've been let down or betrayed, I suppose, by the United States for being included in that axis of evil, that they're not getting any credit, if you will, for what they did do to help out U.S. forces in Afghanistan and the United States.
Scott Peterson, thanks very much. Scott Peterson is a correspondent with the Christian Science Monitor, reporting to us today live from Tehran. I'm joined in the studio now by Ali Banu Azizi. He's a teacher of the history of modern Iran and cultural psychology at Boston College. And joining us from California, Azadeh Moaveni. She's Tehran correspondent for Time magazine. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ali, I'll start with you. Earlier this week, you had the opportunity to meet with Bush officials, people in the administration, to talk to them about the way that U.S. policy could move forward in Iran. What was your message to them?
I think I would echo the point that was just made by Mr. Peterson that you interviewed, that this condemnation of Iran, which came as a surprise, and perhaps we could get into what might have prompted the Bush administration to define Iran as part of this trio of countries, that this was a gift to the conservatives. It dramatically changed the internal political dynamics of the country from a situation in which the reactionary forces, the conservatives, were on the defensive to a new situation where resistance to foreign aggression from the United States has become the major rallying point. And all sides now have to take a strong position against the U.S.
Azadeh Moaveni, Tehran is your home. Do you see the axis of evil reference as Ali suggesting a gift to the conservatives, in effect a colossal blunder on the part of the Americans?
Well, if part of the intention of the axis of evil policy was to encourage the reformers inside Iran, which ostensibly seemed like part of its intention, well, then, of course, it would be a blunder because it undermines all of their efforts towards rapprochement in the last few months. It embarrasses them. It makes them look like they were supporting policies that not only got Iran nowhere, but got Iran insulted on the international stage. So if that was part of that policy's intention, I think it's a collapse. In terms of the general stability of the system, though, I think maybe we could think of it more as a gift to the Islamic Republic rather than the conservatives or the reformists, because it's brought a lot of cohesion to a system that just a month ago was extremely fragmented.
But it is the cohesion that you're describing, Azadeh, a cohesion simply of the clerics, the religious right?
No, it's a cohesion across the board. I mean, we have so many groups inside Iran with different constituencies, different power bases. And whenever, any country would face what appears to be a major external threat, there's a unifying among internal divisions. So I think it's, across the system. including reformists, leftists, you know, across the divide.
I very much agree. In fact, the situation in Afghanistan was a cause of great anxiety for Iran. Many people have pointed out that Iran, as is well known, supported the Northern Alliance and was very much against the Taliban regime. However, the establishment of a pro-American government in Afghanistan represents a major threat to the more reactionary conservative forces in Iran, because it raises that possibility as a possible formula for Iran as well. And for that reason, I think the conservatives have been very much anxious with the events in Afghanistan, and this external threat has been very helpful to them.
Azadeh, earlier today, or perhaps it was yesterday, there was a report from Iran that the government there is willing to turn over al-Qaeda suspects captured in Iran to the countries of origin, either Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia. How do you interpret that?
I see that as part of the continuing anxiety of many officials in Iran that they are going to be a target of the American war on terror in whatever stage two or three comes down the line. I mean, we've seen that anxiety since September 11th, and there have been various other signs of it, you know, changing the visa procedures for Gulf nationals or closing the border with Afghanistan. I mean, you hear a lot of revolutionary rhetoric, but there's a lot of very realistic fear that Iran will become a target. And there are people pragmatic enough in the foreign ministry, for example, who are going to put out signs to dissuade that tendency in the U.S.
Ali Banu-Azizi, you were talking with members of the Bush administration. Do you think that they're genuinely planning an attack on Iran?
I don't believe so. I think, as has been discussed widely in the past couple of days, if there is preparation for a military action, that action would most certainly be directed against Iraq. And we're talking about a one-year period within which such an action might take place.
Do you mean 1 year from now or sometime within the next year?
Within the next year. That's my understanding. I don't believe that there is any attempt at this time to prepare for a similar action against Iran. And quite frankly, I think there has been some attempt on the part of some officials, including Secretary Powell, to take some distance from the statement, the condemnation of Iran, and some attempt to take on a more conciliatory tone. So I don't believe that a military action is imminent, or at least in the foreseeable future.
Okay, Connection listeners, how do you interpret the message that America is sending to Iran? Do you see it as a piece of diplomacy? Do you see it as something that is coming more from the Defense Department rather than the State Department? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
From Boston University.
Connection listeners, we're talking about Iran this hour and the recent reference from the United States President George Bush that the country was part of an axis of evil. What are your thoughts about that? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My guests are Ali Banu-Azizi. He is a teacher of cultural psychology and the history of modern Iran at Boston College. Azadeh Moaveni is Tehran correspondent for Time magazine, has lived in Tehran for the past 2 years. Azadeh, tell me, in your view, what you think we need to know about life in Iran today that perhaps we're missing.
I think the most important thing that we should be bearing in mind is that the Iranian public is widely pro-American, which is a rare thing in the Middle East today. And when we're facing a situation where we're considering, you know, taking out Saddam Hussein, bringing together a new government in Afghanistan, this is something that can be viewed as a resource, having a population of 70 million in the most possibly geostrategically important country in the region, being largely pro-American, comfortable with the idea of the U.S. having a presence in the region, mitigating, you know, the view that the U.S. is, you know, only a great Satan because of what it's doing in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I think that that's often forgotten.
And do you see that, Ali, as a cultural affection for the United States, as a political interest in democracy? How do you interpret the type of society that Azadeh is describing?
First of all, I very much agree with Ms. Mavini's description of the situation. I see it as both of those. There is cultural affinity for the United States. It may sound somewhat paradoxical to say that Iranians are pro-American, given the past, the history of the past 23 years. But in fact, Iran is one of the most westernized societies in the Middle East. There is a long history of relationship with the United States, and therefore that cultural affinity is definitely there. But perhaps more important than that is the unpopularity of the present regime, the clerical theocratic regime in Iran, and the genuine democratic movement in the country represented in support for President Khatami and in various attempts to go to the polls in massive numbers and register opposition to the policies of the present regime. So in a way, we have an opportunity in Iran to see the development of a genuinely democratic, participatory democracy evolving out of a revolutionary situation. And that in the Islamic world, I would suggest, is rather unique. There is no other Islamic country at the present time that has as profound a quest for the establishment of a participatory democracy as Iran does at the moment.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to California. Kyle's waiting on the line. Hi, Kyle.
Hi. Thank you for your great program. I had a question for your respected commentators. I was wondering, you know, since the level of dissatisfaction is quite evident in Iran and it's no secret even to the members of the opposition within the government, the huge participation in, you know, the anniversary of the revolution, is that some sort of a sign to the United States or to the West or, you know, interested parties that, hey, look, we have a vested interest in our revolution, and that has nothing to do with our level of dissatisfaction with the present regime? Is it some sort of a sign that, hey, look, we can manage this ourselves, do not interfere? And number one, and number two is that we feel somehow insulted when that strong pro-Israeli language was actually picked upon us on our cost of actually coming and calling us evil, and we are totally dissatisfied with that.
Azadeh, why don't you start on this, on the attachment to the revolution?
I think that the attachment to the revolution is bound up in a lot of current frustration towards the state of reform and the stagnation politically in the country. So I would say that generally, you know, attachment to the revolution may be sort of a personal value for some people in Iran, but that doesn't mean that they're not critical of what's happening right now politically. But more importantly, I would just caution against using or reading public demonstrations in Iran as really any indication of public sentiment. I mean, I don't think that we should forget, and it's easy to do that when you live you know, in a Western country or in a place like the United States, that Iran is still in many ways a very authoritarian country, and public demonstrations are controlled and permitted by the state, and attendance is encouraged and managed by the state. So I don't know if we can really see that as any sort of indication of how people really feel.
Okay, the second point of Kyle's question, Ali, involves Israel, which is a big part of any conversation that involves the United States and Iran. Let's look at what we know. We know that there are strong indications the shipment of arms that was headed for the Palestinian Authority originated in Iran. We also know Israel's growing concern about the nuclear program that's developing in Iran. So should we be surprised to see the United States as a traditional defender of Israeli interests in the Middle East waving its finger on behalf of those interests?
I think that's precisely what has been happening in the past few months, particularly since September 11th. There is unquestionably a confluence of interests and opinion between the two sides of the political spectrum in Israel itself. Both the Prime Minister Sharon and the Foreign Minister Peres, who usually would take a much more conciliatory issue vis-a-vis the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, on this matter, that is on the matter of Iran, are entirely united and speak with the same voice. The two concerns that you mentioned, the WMD development within Iran, and specifically the development of nuclear capability and missile capability in Iran, plus the Karin A, the 50-ton ship of weapons, were the two important ones. In addition, of course, there is the support or the allegation of support for Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And the statement, the remarkable statement by Foreign Minister Peres, that there are thousands of missiles that have been delivered to southern Lebanon by the Iranian regime. It strikes most observers as an overstatement, as an exaggerated statement. But the details notwithstanding, it's quite clear that Israel now sees Iran as a major threat. It used to be that Israel was more concerned with the immediate countries surrounding it, but now it has probably come to the conclusion that a more major threat could come from the direction of Iran, and has been pressing the administration to take a very strong condemnatory stand against Iran. And this is perceived in Iran precisely in these terms, and therefore the American policy is described, I believe, with an over-exaggerated distortion, as something that is being dictated or pushed for by the Israelis. And as such, it becomes even more damaging and hurtful to the Iranians.
So as a day, people in Iran talk about that today, are they able to talk about the relationship as it exists, as it could exist between Iran and the United States without including Israel in that sentence?
For some inside Iran, that's possible. I think if we're talking about pragmatic politicians, and I'm not talking here about hardliner or reformer, but pragmatic politicians who think of Iranian national interest in a very rational, you know, less ideological way, that's very possible. I mean, there are economic benefits to a relation with the United States, dropping sanctions. But there are still many politicians in Iran who are very ideological, who see the Palestinian cause as, you know, a central pillar of the Iranian revolution, continuing that support as central to, you know, the Iranian vision of what an Islamic republic is. For politicians like that, it's almost out of the question. And these are people who are still fighting for control of the country. So it becomes a very complex question. I did want to second what Dr. Banu Azizi said, though, because I think that the perception inside Iran is, across the board, though, made more suspicious by the timing of you know, the change in the American perception of Iran as a threat alongside the heightened Israeli perception of Iran as a threat. Because what we're talking about here, the weapons of mass destruction program, support for the Lebanese Hezbollah, these are ongoing Iranian projects that have been going on for, I would say, both for at least two decades. Why is it suddenly becoming, you know, a policy priority for the United States right at this moment? So inside Iran, that's a cause for skepticism, questioning U.S. motives.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Kyle, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
And we're going to Boston. Sarah's joining us now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. This is thank you, by the way, for letting me on the air.
You're welcome.
It's a little bit off the subject, but not so much. I mean, we sort of like always talk about our democracy, democracy, democracy around the world, Iran democracy. I was actually, you know, traveling to Iran this summer, and I am actually Iranian national, by the way, and I've lived in the West since 1975. When I went to Iran, I was actually trying to inquire a little bit about, the system in there, how people vote. I was, like, amazed how comparing to the United States Democratic Iran was. And I was, like, sort of, like, laughing to myself when I was, like, thinking about United States democracy and thinking, shouldn't Americans concentrate about democracy in the United States when the whole democratic system is really, it's really not democracy when, we, you know, when politicians are owned by corporations in the United States, like Enron, et cetera. Okay. So I feel like let's just concentrate on bringing democracy, true democracy, here in the United States. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
Sure.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And to Charlotte, North Carolina, to Rob. Hi, Rob.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, hear you fine.
I've been listening to your program, and, you know, it's really a great program. I'd like to say, I don't know her name, but the young lady there, I've wish her the best of luck in her efforts. I think that she really has a good head on her shoulders about this. My point about calling is why does the American press, when they know that demonstrations in foreign countries against the United States are not always but usually motivated by means other than what their true feelings are? And my second point being about the issue that she spoke about, why does the United States focus on Iran now? And what my belief on that is that after this past administration that we have had in this country, and what this Mr. Clinton has done to the national defense of this country, and what he has done to allow both Russia and North Korea and China and all the technological issues that have been sold to those countries who do not represent the best interest of the world. I think
you got to get to the second point, Rob. I'm not following you. Your second question? I'm not getting it.
Okay. My second point was that I think the reason why the United States is focusing on Iran now is because of Bill Clinton's administration and how much technology was allowed to get to, not necessarily, if technology was allowed to get to Iran as far as ICBMs or missile defense, I believe that that's probably the best country it should reach in that region.
Okay, I got you on that one. I want to go to my guests here, Ali Banu-Azizi. I'm going to start with you on this question of the demonstrations. I've covered lots of these demonstrations. I've covered them in Iraq, where we know that Saddam Hussein and the government says, okay, everybody, come downtown. We're going to have a demonstration. We're going to show the Americans. We're going to show the Western world just how angry we are. And, you know, the students come and there's kind of a competition for who can make the most noise. And I was always left with the impression that we shouldn't dismiss that because it is the government speaking. Even if it's not the people speaking, it's the way that the government of a country is trying to send a message.
Yes. Let me make a couple of points on my way to answering your question. First of all, the use of the term axis of evil, the evil part, is certainly borrowed from the lexicon of Ayatollah Khomeini, who started calling the United States as the Great Satan. So this is returning the compliment on the part of the president. And it is somewhat paradoxical or strange that the Iranians, who have been calling the U.S. all these years as the Great Satan, should take such offense when they're called by the same name. Now, secondly, I think perhaps more than any other country, certainly in the Middle East and perhaps around the world, the Iranian regime has had more experience organizing these demonstrations for the past 24 years, if one includes the year of the revolution as well. So they have the machinery, they have the manpower, they have the capability, they have the mobilizational capacity that very few other regimes possess at this time. However, I don't want us to lose sight of the fact that in these demonstrations, in the most recent demonstrations, the reformists, and specifically the president, Khatami, encouraged their people to come out and join the demonstrations, join the opposition to the United States. And that's important. And I think it goes back to the point that we were making earlier, that the designation of Iran after all that has happened by way of rapprochement in the past several months, if not several years, as part of this axis of evil, was an affront to the reformists as well as the conservatives. So in that sense, it has brought some kind of unity. But I would not read too much into that unity. This by no means implies that the reformists are going to abandon, or the people who support them are going to abandon their push for an opening of the system.
Okay. When we come back, Azadeh Moeveni, I'm going to put you to work on the question of weapons and the arms in the region, whether or not, in fact, the reference to Axis of Evil didn't have more to do with the Bush's administration long-term view on a missile defense system. And invite Connection listeners also to join our conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's...
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. I got it right this time. This hour, we're talking about Iran and the recent reference to the Islamic Republic of Iran as a member of the Axis of Evil by the President of the United States, George Bush. What does it mean? What's the United States really thinking about here? Azadeh Moeveni, you're a Time magazine correspondent based there. It's been suggested that, in fact, the United States has no intention to attack Iran at all. It's simply trying to collect a sort of grab bag of bad guys to use in its argument to build a missile defense system. Do you buy that?
I think that's certainly plausible, because if the Axis of Evil was being constructed simply along the lines of those countries who, by the American, you know, administration's definition of terrorism, support terror, then why aren't we seeing countries like Lebanon or Syria included in this axis? What puts Iran apart from countries like that is that it does more, it is considered to have a more serious and advanced program to develop nuclear weapons. And in terms of having a credible enemy that would be required to justify, you know, the United States developing and spending vast amounts of money on a defense system, I think Iran could be a plausible sort of candidate for that role. I don't think that anyone today really thinks that China is going to, you know, launch serious military attacks against the United States. I mean, certainly if this policy is going to need a credible enemy, it's not one that seems apparent right now. So I think what you're saying is plausible.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And we're going to Quincy, Massachusetts. And Hussein is joining us. Hi.
Hi. thank you for accepting my call.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering, the USA keeps on singling out Muslim countries as enemies. If Iran is building the weapons of mass destruction, as they're saying, why can't they? Aren't they a sovereign state? I mean, the USA itself builds weapons of mass destruction, and if we look at history, they're the only country to have actually used them. If the reason is so-called weapons of mass destruction, you have a whole host of other countries. But basically, I think that the main reason behind it is not the weapons. This is just used as a front. I think the main reason is basically after Iraq and Saudi Arabia, Iran, all of them together, hold 75% of the world's oil supplies. And that's the real issue, basically. It comes down to capitalism.
So the United States targeting Iran as a part of an axis of evil does what in terms of the oil that you're seeing then, Hussein?
Well, basically, I'm seeing that it's trying to control the whole region. We have the Iraq, we have the army base in Saudi Arabia, then we have the bombing of Iraq as enemies, and now we have Iran as enemies. So all of this together, it's all in the oil area of the world.
Ali Banu Azizi, you're a professor of modern history of Iran. What do you think about Hussein's point?
Well, certainly the matter of oil is important, not only in the Persian Gulf area, but increasingly in the Caspian Sea area. And I would say that is a factor. But quite frankly, I don't quite see the connection between the oil factor and the present crisis. I'd like to go back to the weapons of mass destruction, which seems to be far more important, at least in terms of the Israeli perceptions of threat from Iran.
Why shouldn't Israel be concerned if, in fact, Iran has developed the Shahab missile capable of carrying a significant warhead into Israel? Why wouldn't the Israelis be concerned?
Well, I think they ought to be concerned. I think they ought to be concerned. Iran is a signatory to the non-proliferation treaty, and there is a possibility that under certain circumstances, Iran might be tempted to use one of these weapons. I think they ought to be concerned. But how one deals with that issue is what...
For the Americans, you mean.
For the American policy to determine. I would not dismiss that threat at all.
And Hussein's suggesting there's a certain sort of racist attitude in the American policy where it's easier to say to Islamic republics, we'd really rather you not have big weapons.
Well, that's... seems to be contradicted by the apparent acceptance of Pakistan as a holder of nuclear weapons. There was, of course, a very strong reaction to it initially when they tested.
Came as a bit of a surprise.
Which was a surprise. But once the Pakistani regime took what, from an American point of view, is a conciliatory, supportive role, particularly vis-à-vis Afghanistan, those concerns seem to have abated. In fact, they were not at all brought up in the most recent discussions between the president and the Pakistani president, Musharraf.
Azadeh, I wonder if I can ask you to just weigh in on the relations, the Gulf relations here, because we know that Iran and Iraq were at each other's throats throughout the entire decade of the 1980s. So when the Americans point the finger of criticism or blame at both countries, isn't it also possible that the United States could exploit a good relationship with Iran if, in fact, its primary target was Iraq?
Well, I mean, it certainly could. I think that there's no country bordering Iraq today that would benefit from a weakened Iraq as much as Iran. I think that for other Gulf allies of the United States right now, the prospect of supporting a U.S. military campaign against Saddam Hussein is domestically an extremely sensitive proposition, whereas for Iran, it's not domestically, not across the system in terms of policy. I think that nearly everyone across the board within Iran's factions would agree that a weakened Iraq would be to Iran's interest. So this is certainly a major possibility for Washington, is to exploit that this is also in Iran's interest, along similar lines as what happened with Afghanistan.
I would only add to that that it would be, from a military point of view, from a political point of view, totally senseless to go against Iran and Iraq at the same time. That kind of campaign would just defy all reason.
Well, which is why I'm, you know, why when they're put together as sort of evil neighbors, I have to really wonder whether or not there isn't more subtlety to the State Department, Defense Department decision to include Iran with Iraq in the axis of evil, whether or not there isn't something going on that we haven't talked about that we're missing here.
I think the only common denominator among the three is the weapons of mass destruction. And this may relate to your earlier point, that this may well support the administration's decision to go for an anti-ballistic missile treaty.
That this is part of a long-term plan.
That's right.
Hasadeh Moavveni, the dilemma that the United States has is in trying to figure out how it pulls together a policy that deals with a government that presents two faces, because in many ways that's what Iran appears to be from the outside. The theocracy under the supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and the reformists under President Mohammad Khatami. Who is the State Department supposed to be talking to?
I think the wise thing for the State Department or any administration is to talk to the Iranian system as a whole. There are appointed officials inside Iran who have offices. I mean, in many ways, Iran seems extremely opaque, seems unclear who's making decisions. It seems as though there are many circles with a lot of power. But on the other hand, I mean, the Revolutionary Guard has offices. They're charged with internal security. The supreme leader has an office with representatives around the world, as does the elected government and the foreign ministry. So the possibility of dialogue with the entire range of the system is possible. And to me, it seems that that's the only perhaps pragmatic way of dealing with Iran right now. It's a reality that part of the government has popular support, and the part of the government that has less popular support has more power. So that's an extremely explosive situation. And for policy decisions to be made with such a structure or such a country, it seems to me that it would only be wise to engage with all of the various elements that are in positions of control.
I think the possibility for engaging Iran in a dialogue at this time is not really present. It seems to me that the best policy would be to declare and insist upon American values, the support for a participatory democratic movement in Iran, the emphasis on the fact that there is no enmity towards Iran as an Islamic regime, and so on and so forth, and to take a very firm stand against any adventurous attempts on the part of the Iranian regime. I think the United States would be best off not engaging one side or the other at the present time, but limiting its policy initiatives really to those declaratory positions of what the American values are. Human rights should certainly be put in there. Women's rights should certainly be put in there. And then taking a firm stand against any actions on the part of the Iranian government that are threatening to the United States and its allies.
Our number is 1-800. Yes, Azadeh.
I just wanted to add to that, though, that I think that although the possibility of engagement with Iran right now is very slim, I do think that engaging across the board with the Iranian system, though, is the key. Because a reality of the obstacles to Iran-U.S. relations has been that inside Iran, it's being seen as a zero-sum game in the power struggle. The faction that is in charge of the country when relations are established gets the prize. I mean, all of the economic benefits, the political capital that comes with after 20 years, you know, reestablishing ties, it's become a giant prize in this internal political football. And when you're dealing with factions, obviously whoever is not in power is going to try and undermine rapprochement. So whether there's immediate possibilities or sort of greater possibilities, you know, down the line, across the board engagement is going to be key.
We're going to Courtney, joining us now from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Courtney.
Good morning, Dick. How are you?
Good.
I just find a sort of level of complacency in this whole discussion. It was just announced over the wires that the oil markets are starting to take seriously the possibility of an invasion of Iraq. The oil prices have just sort of peaked up. And the Christian Science Monitor was just talking about the fact that it's possible that Iran would not look upon an invasion of Iraq very positively, that in fact it might be seen as an effort to sandwich Iran from Afghanistan and Iraq. If we had a pro-Iraqi regime, U.S., pro-U.S. Iraqi regime, and a pro-U.S. Afghanistan regime, that Iran would not like that.
Okay. Courtney, Azadeh, I'll get you to respond quickly to Courtney because we're a little short on time here.
My quick response would be that I think the internal situations in both Afghanistan and Iraq are complex enough and have enough sort of religious and sectarian issues involved that the prospect of any regime coming to power that had internal legitimacy that was blanketly pro-U.S. in a way that threatened Iran, for domestic reasons in both of those places, I see that as very unlikely. So this idea that Iran is going to be sandwiched between two puppet regimes, I mean, I think if the U.S. is planning for, you know, supporting regimes that are going to have lasting legitimacy among the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, it sort of perforce can't be at the expense of Iran.
Very briefly, Ali.
And even if that were so, the response to it should not be a belligerent attitude towards Iran at the time or at the time that the U.S. is trying to enter into what seems to be a war with Iraq.
All right. Courtney, thank you for your call. And to my guests, thanks for being with me. Azadeh Moaveni is Tehran correspondent for Time magazine. Ali Banu Azizi teaches cultural psychology and the history of modern Iran at Boston College. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.